Ah, it's a great day to be outside and enjoying your favorite beverage. Today, on The Wine Road, I'll be talking about wine and spirits. Join me, won't you?
The most fascinating, most interesting thing about wine, whether it's my wine or somebody else's, is that it is an encapsulation of a time and a place in a way that really nothing else is.
We want to be as transparent and honest about our product as we can. We want to be as authentic as we can about our product. And we want people to be able to see that as well.
Coming up on today's show, I'll venture up to Alexander Valley to talk with family member and winemaker Jake of Hawk's Wine. They're also involved in a fundraising raffle with proceeds benefiting Wine Country Affordable Housing. The prize in the current raffle is one anybody would enjoy. Stay tuned. I'll also chat with Timo and Ashby. I challenge you to find another couple with those names. They run Spirit Works Distillery and have made quite a name for themselves and are winning awards. And they won me over. I'm not a fan of gin. Not only did I find their gin tolerable, I actually liked it, as well as their slow gin, vodka, and whiskey. They're coming up later in the hour. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for joining us. On the Wine Road is sponsored by Smothers European Volvo, a family-owned business since 1982, on the Corbiato Row and smothers-european-volvo.com. By Sonoma Clean Power, choice, local control, competitive electricity prices. You can have it all. Sonoma Clean Power, local, renewable, ours. And On Fire in Santa Rosa. They carry incredible outdoor kitchens, furniture, and grills for homes and businesses on Cleveland Avenue. If you live in northern Sonoma County or have visited and made your way to Alexander Valley, you may have come across the Jimtown store on Highway 128. It's a favorite stop for farmers, wine tasters, and cyclists. It's more of a country deli than a store. Well, right next door is Hawk's Wine Tasting Room. They also have a location in the town of Sonoma. I met Jake Hawks, the son of the family wine grower, last weekend in the Alexander Valley location. We sat out back on their grassy knoll on a picnic bench to talk about their history and the fundraiser for Wine Country Affordable Housing. I said to Jake, you know, as I've seen your modest tasting room, I never would have guessed that your family has been in the wine business since 1972.
Yeah, we have been here for a long time, and one of the things that is so different than when I was a kid is that now that this is a world-renowned wine region, and people come here from all over the place to taste wine. But when I was a kid, it was prune country, and people had just started to plant wine grapes here. So, yeah, my family was one of the first. My dad was one of the first people to plant Cabernet in Alexander Valley. And I think he was guessing himself when he did that, and it just turned out to work.
Yeah, I guess prunes just wasn't a draw for people outside the area.
You know, I don't know. It was spectacularly beautiful. I mean, I think I imagined this place before there was any farming at all, and I'm sure it was beautiful then. And then in the 1800s, it was wheat country, and I think that must have been spectacularly beautiful. It's just, if there's one thing that makes me want to keep doing what I'm doing, it's the beauty of this place.
Right.
And that's why my parents came here too. I mean, they didn't know anything about farming Cabernet, and other than the basics, didn't have any reason to believe that Alexander Valley was going to be a great place to do it. There was no Cabernet wine from Alexander Valley when they came here, but I think they were just enamored of how beautiful this place was and wanted to be here.
Yeah. Did I read that your dad was a home winemaker?
Yeah, we used to make wine. My dad made wine for the first time from our fruit at about the time I was born in the mid-70s. But then, yeah, I made wine as a kid all the time. I used to make wine when I was in high school in demijohns, and I always have experimented with it.
Yeah, from your own grapes?
Yeah. And in those days, actually, the style of Chardonnay that we still make now, we're mostly a Cabernet house. That's what we're known for. But the style of Chardonnay that we have now, to some degree, is traceable back to the Chardonnay that I used to make in demijohns when I was in my teens, just because it was an easy way to make a small amount of wine. And so it was just very clean, very straightforward fruit, because I didn't have any barrels.
Right. And I think there is a law that if you make your own wine as a teenager, you can drink it, right?
I don't know. I'm not admitting here to having drunk it, just to having made it.
Right. Over the years, you've had the opportunity to purchase some different vineyards other than your home Stone Vineyard. Of the ones that you mentioned on your website, Stone, Pyramid, and Red Winery.
Stone seems the most interesting because you do grow Cabernet on the one end, and it slopes down to the river banks where you're growing Chardonnay.
Yeah, I don't know. They're, again, largely, I think the reason my folks bought the land that they did buy to plant vineyard on, and we have three different vineyards in Alexander Valley now, was just because they were beautiful. And then the fact that Hillside Cabernet, as a general rule, tends to be better than Bottomland Cabernet was just a happy coincidence. We have a couple of places down on Chalk Hill Road now that are in the Alexander Valley Appellation, but yeah, a mile and a half down from the head of Chalk Hill Road. And it's just it is a really fascinating geography down there. The reason Chalk Hill is called Chalk Hill is because there are large deposits of volcanic ash there from an eruption of Mount St. Helena millions of years ago. And you have that mixed with all sorts of seismic upheaval, rocks being brought up out of the riverbeds, and it makes for just an amazingly varied topography and varied soils, and then all kinds of different weather too. So it's a really difficult, really interesting place to farm grapes.
I was surprised to see that your Cabernet, often you only pull 2 tons out of that. The yield is small, so that's about like 50% of what others can do.
Yeah, and to be frank, part of that is a function of the age of the vineyards too. I mean, our things are fairly densely planted, but we also, because the soils are very poor, the vines have never been really vigorous and have never yielded a lot of fruit. And at this point, most of our Cabernet vineyards are in the 25 to 30-year-old range. So, yeah, old vines.
But that tends to create some interesting fruit and good concentration of flavors and more complex.
Yeah, I think so. I do, but I will say, I think it's true. I think that there's a correlation between lower yield and higher quality. There's some correlation, but one of the things that makes farming so interesting and keeps you coming back and winemaking is that it's really hard to understand what is making the quality that you seek and how you're going to get it in a given year. The difference, you know, I like making beer too. I like making all kinds of things, bread, you know, anything you can ferment, pickles. The thing that is so interesting about wine and makes it so challenging and makes it continue to fascinate is that what you're working with to make your product is different every year. So a winemaker, especially the kind of winemaker I am, I'm pretty much of a non-interventionist. So, you know, I like to preserve the grapes as closely as I possibly can in their natural state. So what I want to represent is the fruit and the vineyard, the place, the time. And it's different every year. If you're making bread, you have a recipe for making bread, you tweak the recipe, you buy the flour from the same source, same thing is true of beer, and eventually you get to the point where you know how to make the loaf of bread you love. And with grapes, with making wine, that's not an option.
You can't count on anything when it comes to grapes from year to year.
No, that's true. Well, yeah, this past year is a perfect example of that. I mean, what would have been news for the 2017 harvest, what was the news is how incredibly hot it had been. And how incredibly hot it was, and then in specific that the Labor Day heat spike when it was like 115 degrees for 3 days running out here. And then the whole place caught on fire. And then that became the story of the 2017 harvest. So, yeah, no, you never know.
So your family was growing grapes, and it was about 2002 that I saw that your dad was kind of tiring of dealing with the growing business, and that's when you got the idea, well, let's just do our own winery.
Yeah, you know, as I love the farming side of what we do, because to me that really is where the wine is made. And even my cellar master, who's an old friend at this point, I mean, even he who seldom goes into the vineyard, he'll agree that's the wine is made in the vineyard, and it's beautiful in the vineyard as opposed to locked up in a cellar. So I'll always love it, but at the same time, making wine, growing grapes and making wine is very different than just growing grapes. It gives you much more of a chance for self-determination. You can express what your vineyard is producing in the way that you want to express it, and you can take it to the market yourself too.
I found it interesting how you found your original winemaker. He bought grapes from you guys and made his own wine, and you're hey, why don't you come join our team?
Yeah, Herman Frobe is a guy who worked as a cellar master at Burgess Cellars in Napa for years. And yeah, he loves making wine. I say that as though not everybody who makes wine does love making wine. I think that's true. I mean, I heard an interview with Ryan Adams, a rock musician, pop musician, who said, yeah, I'm a musician whose hobby is making music. And the same thing is true of Herman. He's a winemaker whose hobby is making wine. So he worked in the cellar at Burgess and then on his spare time made his own wine in his garage at home. So he bought grapes from us to make wine. He had a little commercial label for a while, and that was all in Napa. Yeah, his wine was very well received. His wine made from our grapes was very well received. And we knew him, and he knew how to do it.
Yeah. Are you the winemaker now?
Yeah, I am the winemaker. Well, it's funny, you know, somebody has to be the front man in these things. So, I mean, more honestly and more realistically, I'm the person who takes credit for making the wine. It really is a joint effort, and it's a bunch of different people working on it. And I spend more time in the vineyard than I do in the cellar. And I make the ultimate decisions about how we're going to ferment things, what kind of barrel program we're going to have, how we're going to blend things, what we're going to pick and when we're going to pick it, all those decisions. But at the same time, the day-to-day operations in the cellar are totally critical to what we do. And we have one family of folks doing that, the Vasquez family. And so I feel like they make the wine just as much as I do.
Talk to many assistant winemakers who are more the winemaker than the actual winemaker is.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't really know how anybody else does it. I wasn't trained to make wine, and Francisco Vasquez, who's the cellar master, wasn't trained to make wine either. My dad wasn't trained to make wine. So largely we have just figured it out ourselves over the years. So I don't know how everybody else does it, but...
Well, you figured it out pretty well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. But I know that Pancho doesn't want to be sitting here giving this interview. So as long as that's kind of the difference between a cellar master and a winemaker, I think part of the time is the winemaker is the guy who's willing to show his face, and the cellar master is the guy who'd rather stay in the kitchen.
He's Jake Hawks of Hawks Wine in Alexander Valley. They also have a tasting room in Sonoma. We'll talk about the wines they bottle when we continue on the Wine Road. You're listening to 1350 AM and 103.5 FM News Talk KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, and this is On the Wine Road. Still to come this hour, I'll talk with the owners of Spirit Works Distillery in Sebastopol. Right now, I'm in Alexander Valley with Jake Hawks of Hawks Wine. We'll touch upon an important fundraiser he's behind, the proceeds of which benefit Wine Country Affordable Housing. That's coming up in a few minutes. I noticed on the Hawks Wine website they feature two different bottles for their red wine, one for the Alexander Valley, Cabernet and Merlot, and a unique, slender, taller bottle for their single vineyard Cabernet.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about marketing wine at all when I was making decisions about how to bottle stuff. I just thought those bottles were beautiful and interesting, and so differentiated what we do a little bit. It's funny.
That's a cool thing, though.
It is. The single vineyards. I mean, to me, so when we started out in 2002, we made a Cabernet and a Merlot. And the thinking was that we were going to make Cabernet, Merlot, and Chardonnay, and that the Cabernet would be a blend of all three different vineyards that we farm. And then as experiments, as I started taking over the winemaking, I started experimenting with fermenting and barreling small lots from the individual vineyards. In 2003, we bottled the first of those. And then in 2005, we started bottling single vineyards from each of the three different vineyards that we farm, all 100% Cabernet, one from each of the three places. And I thought those were going to be specialty bottlings that people who were really nerdy were going to be interested in, and then otherwise I would just be doing it for myself. But over the years, it's ended up being really what we're known for more than anything else.
Well, it's nice to have that addition to your portfolio, and I'm sure that they do taste uniquely different.
Yeah, no, it's the kind of success that I would not have, certainly I didn't plan on, but that I would have been a fool to refuse. But different people like different things. For me, the most fascinating, most interesting thing about wine, whether it's my wine or somebody else's, is that it is an encapsulation of a time and a place in a way that really nothing else is. So when we get down to making single vineyard Cabernets, it's easy. It's not a complicated job as a winemaker to do that, but to me, it's still the most fundamental, most interesting thing we can do.
You and your father both have good senses of humor, you know, kind of a self-deprecating, dry sense of humor on your website. And you look so serious on your website.
I haven't even looked at that picture. That's funny.
You need to look back at your photos because okay. I think there's only one way you're smiling, but yet you're smiling through this whole interview.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't love having my picture taken. Maybe that's it. I'm not sure.
But you are very serious about your current raffle that's underway and the proceeds of which will benefit the Wine Country Affordable Housing. Tell me about that organization, and I'm curious, were you involved with the creation of that?
Well, yeah, speaking of being impulsive, my sister and I, my family, has started a fund called Wine Country Affordable Housing with the idea that we want to raise money to be able to build affordable housing in Sonoma County. And that's a really big goal, and I don't know at this point exactly how we're going to get our arms around it. But because of the fires that occurred here in October, I just felt a sense of urgency about a problem that had been bothering me for years. And even though I didn't know exactly what I could do to make a serious impact on this problem, I wanted to do something. So we called some of our local friends here and asked them to donate various things, car service, meals in fancy restaurants, tastings, reserve tastings at wineries, stuff like that, and put together a series of raffle packages to try to raise money for affordable housing.
The grand prize is phenomenal, what you were just kind of talking about.
Well, yeah, this one, the current raffle package is built around a new signature event in Alexander Valley called Experience Alexander Valley. That's a bunch of small, 20-person or less, intimate reserve tastings in Alexander Valley. It's taking place in late June. And we have taken that and then built a little vacation around it in Wine Country. And it includes a stay at Le Mars Hotel and dinner for two at Single Thread Farms, which is a 2-Michelin-star restaurant in Healdsburg, right, and car service throughout the weekend and picnics in secret spots throughout Alexander Valley. So, yeah, it's a pretty...
And if that wasn't enough, you also get a bottle from every participating winery, which is 21 bottles.
It is, and that is, and that should be a really amazing little cellar of wine, just because I know all of these folks, and we're going to be soliciting rare and interesting bottles from them that ought to make a really spectacular collection when we've got it all together. So yeah, I mean it's an amazing raffle package, and we're really lucky that people have been so generous about donating all this great stuff.
I was glad to see that they're coming up with the Experience Alexander Valley. For a while there, you guys didn't have your own celebration like a lot of the wine regions do around here.
Yeah, well, I'm on the board of the Alexander Valley Wine Growers, and it's true. We used to do Taste. It was called Taste Alexander Valley here, and it was this kind of a conventional, a big tasting event with all the tasting rooms open and the hope being to draw thousands of people here to drive around and just get to taste wine at all these different tasting rooms all day. And it just, to me, lacked the ingenuity and excitement that I thought we really needed to make the event a success. So we have retooled this year and again have built an event that is more around insider experiences and intimate behind-the-scenes looks at what brings wine to life in Sonoma County.
Yeah, that seems a little more appealing.
You know, we'll see what happens. I certainly think that whether I'm making wine or designing a party, I try to think of a party that I would like to go to or a wine that I would like to drink. And it's exactly the kind of experiences that I look at them and I think, wow, this looks like a blast. I mean, we're going to do a couple of different things. We're going to do yoga in the vineyard, and then I'm going to cook brunch both Saturday and Sunday morning. And then in the afternoons, we're going to do a barrel making demonstration where a guy in Napa who builds barrels is going to come out and show how he builds barrels and then toast the barrel on the spot for people to see. So it should be a pretty cool event.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there are also things like a blending seminar of all 5 Bordeaux varietals in Rodney Strong's Rockaway Vineyard, which is just a spectacular sight overlooking Alexander Valley that the general public never has access to. So it's at least partly my baby, so I hope people love it.
May you reach success there as you have here with your tasting room here and the tasting room you have in Sonoma.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, as I say, I don't know how I'm going to get there, but for me, deciding that I'm going to try is the first step.
If you want to learn about the raffle and the remarkable grand prize that benefits Wine Country Affordable Housing, go to winecountryhousing.org. O-R-G. The winner will be announced March 10th, but consider looking at it now so you don't forget. By the way, the Hawks family spells their name with an E before the S, H-A-W-K-E-S. Their website is hawkswine.com. I really enjoyed talking with Jake, and again, wish them well up there in Alexander Valley. And don't forget, they have a tasting room in Sonoma. Up next, we get spirited as we continue on the Wine Road. Welcome back to On the Wine Road here on FM News Talk KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis. Spirit Works Distillery has been on my radar for quite some time. I've heard nothing but good things about what they craft. And not long ago, I was at the North Bay Business Journal and Winnovation Awards in November, and Timo and Ashby of Spirit Works were recognized as the leading business in the distiller owner category. And just recently, their Slow Gin picked up the Good Food Award. We'll talk about that coming up. Interestingly, these two met up on an environmental research vessel on the high seas. Who'd have thought they'd be distilling pros just a few years later? They certainly didn't. We were talking in their tasting room, and some good content was being discussed, so I quickly turned on my recorder. Timo was just beginning to talk about their location in the Barlow Shops Food and Drink Complex in Sebastopol.
The Barlow was just a concept at the time, and one that was exciting to us. It was kind of exactly what we were looking for, and it has turned into exactly what we were looking for. We're able to be a beautiful manufacturing space behind glass doors, which means that anyone can see what we're doing at all times, which is also very important to us. We want to be as transparent and honest about our product as we can. We want to be as authentic as we can about our product. And we want people to be able to see that as well. Yeah. So this space invites people in. Even our tasting room, as you can see, has these large picture windows into the space so that people can see what we're doing.
That is an incredible still that you guys have, the Carl.
Yeah, so that's the make. That's the company in Germany that makes... one of the companies in Germany that makes stills. They have a long tradition of small craft still making, long time, and of course the German tradition of being engineers and exact in what they do. So this still here was designed by Ashby to do what she wanted it to do at the time, and then was engineered to her specifications out in Germany, built out there and shipped out here, and then we built it together.
Obviously, I didn't design stills from the beginning of time. This was
But you altered it, though, didn't you?
I mean, there were elements that I knew I wanted the still to do specifically. Yeah, that's for sure.
So, adding in some slight different components to it and taking some out as well. So it is truly a hybrid still. And it allows us to do many different things on the one piece of equipment.
Everything you make.
Everything we make, and more as well, actually. Everything we make currently is grain-based, but it is actually a fruit still as well. So it will allow us to... We can also play with it with fruit-based products in there.
Why don't you give me a quick run of everything that you're producing right now?
Sure. So we do every... Our main products from our organic red winter wheat, our vodka, our gin, slow gin, barrel gin, and then our wheat whiskey. And then we also feature a rye whiskey, which is 70% rye and some specialty malted grains.
The slow gin, I'm particularly proud of. We are the only producers of it in the U.S. But also, it's a slightly different version, I think, to what people are used to, in the sense that it's not as sweet as a traditional slow gin. So it's very popular and used a lot out in market in the cocktail scene. But we went and did something else with it as well. We have beautiful American white oak barrels, and so we put some slow gin one day into a barrel because we can, and aged it in a barrel for a short period of time. So we make a barrel reserve slow gin, which I've never heard, I haven't heard exists nowadays. However, I would hazard a guess that back in the day, when slow gin was being made, they would make it in a wooden container of some sort. And so this is probably a bit more what the traditional flavor may have been back in the day.
I prefer the spirits from barrel a little bit, especially like a grappa. If you can get a nice caramel-colored grappa that was aged in barrel, so much easier to drink.
The maturation process is fascinating to us, and the effects that the barrel is going to have on whatever liquid is in that barrel is pretty amazing. The barrel always softens that product, and of course, by adding its own components to that product, it can, depending how that barrel has been treated and what wood it is, it will add different sweet sides to it and different components that will make it feel more mellow, more round.
Now that I'm drinking the barrel-aged slow gin, I'm getting a little bit of pepper. Could that be from the white oak?
It could be, yeah.
Barrels are known for being a little bit more peppery, I think.
I think so. It depends which particular aspect of them they've been treated, but there is definitely some components in there that can come through as pepper. They tend to add more vanilla flavors, butterscotches, toasted coconuts, those sort of sweet, caramels, yeah. But absolutely, there are floral components in there. There are peppery components in there. It changes our slow gin from one that's delicious kind of cranberry, citrusy kind of sour kind of side to it. It adds a little candied orange in there and those sort of flavors. It's interesting. It's interesting.
All from one berry and a barrel.
Yeah.
And you won the Good Food Award for your slow gin. Not the barrel, but your regular slow gin.
Yeah, for the regular slow gin, we did. We were very honored for that. It's a pretty rigorous competition to enter because it's all about sustainability and how you make your product and the ingredients that go into it. So it was a very big compliment to be among some of the top distilleries in the country that won an award for our spirit.
And congratulations to them for that recognition. They're Ashby and Timo of Spirit Works Distillery in Sebastopol, Sonoma County. Speaking of their efforts to be sustainably conscious, we'll touch upon their grain-to-glass philosophy when On the Wine Road continues. This is FM News Talk KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, and we are On the Wine Road. I'm at the Barlow in Sebastopol talking with Timo and Ashby of Spirit Works Distillery. When you visit their website, you'll see reference to their grain-to-glass philosophy. They are determined to only use quality products, for instance, using organically grown wheat and choosing producers with whom they have complete faith.
Sure, sure. That's a huge important fact. Anything of your base ingredient is so important to us. We have an environmental background as well, and so we wanted that to reflect in the spirits that we make and everything that we produce here.
Do you think your awards are stemming from that, or is it also the aspect of the Carl that you're using?
I think it's many pronged factors that contribute to that recognition. We are nothing, of course, but our team. And as I said, we're a very small group of people here, but there's 8 of us that work here at Spirit Works currently. And every single one of those people affects how we're represented out in market, how our product is made and packaged, the design and the whole outlook of who we are, the running of the tasting room. The very fact that our space is clean and tidy, and all those different factors contribute to a presence and a brand reputation that has put us in a place that that seems to work. When we first started being a grain-to-glass facility, a lot of people told us that from a business aspect, and they're quite right as well, it's quite an expensive venture because
you're looking for organic material, and that's going to be a little more challenging.
Well, that, but also we spend a lot of time and raw materials making our base spirit, whereas a lot of distilleries and a lot of products out there are made with with a base spirit that's bought. So they don't have to go through most of this process or time.
Or,
yeah, which also has its place. There's some great products made in that way. But we wanted that control from start to finish. And so what's happening at the time, that was difficult. What's happening more and more now is that we're finding that the consumers, people out there who enjoy spirits, are asking that question: who makes it and how is it made? And what is the components that's going into this? They're becoming a lot more curious about those products. And so now, because of that, we're very well placed for that because of our philosophy right from the start, which is that we want to do this right. We want to do it authentically.
That's great.
Yeah, we're lucky that we picked that path, but also it was part of who we are, who Ashby and I are.
How is your slow gin being received by the family? Do they think that you're encroaching upon the secret family recipe, or is it different enough that they're just happy for you? And
I think they like it. They keep asking for it, so it can't be.
But our first test was to send one of our first batches to Timo's father, and he gave us his blessing.
Great. Also, my family, my parents, and my brother as well, actually. I have three siblings, but one of my brothers... They helped a lot with the recipe development back in the day. So when we said we're going to go down down the road of making slow gin commercially, they helped us with the recipe back at home to figure out what was going on, because we were living in the U.S. and so we couldn't find slows here. So they were picking slows and doing that for us. They were a great help and very, very supportive of our endeavors out here. Both families have been very supportive of what we're doing here. It's been great.
Yes, I read that Timo based his slow gin on a family recipe, so I'm glad to hear they've been supportive. As long as the recipe stays a secret, I'm guessing. I'll be back with more from Spirit Works Distillery as we continue on the wine road. We're back on the Wine Road here on FM News Talk, KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis. On today's show, we're not only on the Wine Road, we've taken a detour down the Spirits Road. I'm at Spirit Works Distillery in Sebastopol. You may have caught it earlier that owners and husband and wife, Timo and Ashby Marshall, met on a research vessel sailing across the globe. I asked Ashby if she ever shakes her head, wondering how they got to be where they are today.
It is one of those. Someone, you know, of course, asked me the other day how long we'd been married, and I was like, wow, we're coming up on 13 years. I feel young. That seems like a long time ago, but we've managed to accomplish a lot in that time, which is pretty exciting. We've always been adventurous, and we've always been somewhat independent, and so I think this path sort of was very appealing to us, to be able to run your own business, which in one way is great, and of course the other side of it is you're responsible.
Fortunately, you have Lauren here to help you, and I guess she was your...
Lauren's been here since the very beginning. So Lauren actually started as our first tasting room manager, and before that, she was working in chocolate, and she had become interested in spirits because she was doing this little chocolate pairing section with the company that she was with. So she would go out and do a chocolate pairing with whiskeys, and that piqued her interest in spirits. She ended up moving up to this area and just showed so much interest in production. She was great in the tasting room. She is awesome with people, and we loved her in here, but she was like, I think I want to...
She had a stellar palate.
Yeah, exactly. She has an incredible palate, and she was ready to come and work. And yeah, so she worked with me for a year and just learned everything so fast and so well, and her palate, as you mentioned, is just right on, which is exactly what you need in distillation.
I guess having that winery background and growing up in vineyards, she developed flavors pretty early on.
Sure, yeah, I'm sure that has a lot to do with it, yeah, being with a wine family. And she continues on her own personal education, so she takes a lot of courses at the community college and things on different palate sensing, and which is great to see that she's so passionate she wants to continue the education.
You heard us referencing their still earlier. The second column has 21 plates, which is basically 21 different shelves reaching up to the tall ceiling. I asked Ashby if she could take a moment to explain how the distillation process works.
Sure. I mean, it's a beautiful process. So the, I guess the concept of distillation is that you're removing the spirit or the alcohol from any water so that you're purifying that. And when you boil a pot of liquid that has some alcohol in it, but also has some other impurities, the alcohol boils before the water or those other impurities. And as it boils, it turns into that vapor. And the vapor then goes through the still itself, is rectified, purified, and then runs through the condenser, which is simply a cold water jacket that brings that back into a liquid form again, and you get that pure spirit. So it's literally gone from a spirit form, a spirit vapor, down back into a liquid, and that's the beauty of where distillation.
Nice and clean, no impurities.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can do so many things with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really creative way, because we can make our own base here. So we make our own distillate that's 190 proof, which is the definition of vodka. We can then make our gin from that, and then make our barrel gin and our slow gin. So it's very nice that we have the flexibility within our own spirit to be able to then make other things. Our head distiller also, Lauren, has been experimenting with some other things that we're just doing, you know, minimal tastings out of the tasting room here, but she's put out an aqua vie that we're looking forward to, and maybe a nocino down the line. So there's always something fun coming out of here as well.
Maybe a limoncello.
Maybe. Now, I haven't heard that one thrown about, actually, but you never know. There are a lot of lemons around here.
But interesting that vodka is the base alcohol in a sense, and even with the whiskey too, the wheat whiskey.
Sure. Well, it's the base grain. For the whiskey specifically, there is a different yeast and a different distillation process. But yeah, it's the exact same grain. Yeah, it's a really interesting process.
So the rye whiskey is the only one that's a little different out of your whole lineup.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I have a big palate for rye, and it was something that I always wanted to make. And so, you know, being head distiller, I could at the time. And yeah, of course, rye is a very popular spirit. So we really wanted to feature that. It's a very heavy rye. It's over 70% rye, and then a little bit of specialty brewing malt. So our goal was to really find that spice that you get from the rye, but then balance it with a little sweetness from the malts. And it's been very well received. But right now we're putting out all our rye whiskeys, and our wheat whiskeys are 3 years old, aged in new American charred oak barrels.
Yeah. Again, I love that aged flavor.
Yeah, yeah.
Barrel aged flavor.
It's a gentle coercion towards the spirit, I think. It's beautiful.
So how many years have you been at it now?
We've been here since 2012. Yeah, yeah. So it was about 6 months after that that we put out our first project. I actually had some time here we wanted to put out our gin and our slow gin. That was our main goal to get out initially. And the recipe for gin, the amount of botanicals that you can put into a gin are in the hundreds. And so to find and hone in on that recipe took me about 6 months.
I bet.
Yeah, there was, you know, things that I really wanted to put in it, but then when you distilled them, it just didn't work out that way. So it was a good learning process though. And then luckily we didn't have to put something out too fast. So I was like, maybe I really love it. And this we came out with, like, yeah, we're very, very proud of this.
I like it.
Thanks.
And as I said earlier, I'm not a gin fan, so I could drink that.
Sure. It's interesting because we did try to keep that dry traditional gin element, but I think because we hand zest our lemon and oranges here, it brings a brightness to it that people really respond to well.
So you've already had to expand. You said you're about 2,000 to 3,000 cases now.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're getting up there, and then, you know, everything's based on demand, so the more people out there are looking for us, the more that we'll be able to put out.
Well, keep winning awards, and the word will continue to spread.
That helps, certainly.
Well, you've already had a reputation, and I almost have to apologize for taking so long to get over here to do this interview. Yeah.
Well, no, everyone has busy lives and busy places, you know, and there's a lot of cool stuff around here, so as a journalist, you've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, that well's not going to run dry anytime soon.
No, I don't think so.
It's a real pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for coming. And we always invite people. Our tasting room's open from Wednesday through Sunday from 11 to 5. And then we do tours on the weekends, and we love to have people here and come check it out.
Definitely go by for a visit to enjoy vodka, whiskey, rye and wheat, gin, and their award-winning slow gin.
You may have noticed that Timo disappeared. He had to go back to work. You know, they put in about 12 hours over there every day. Thanks to Ashby and Timo for taking the time to talk with me. You can find out more about them at spiritworksdistillery.com. That wraps up another hour on The Wine Road. Find my past interviews at onthewineroad.com, as podcasts on iTunes and other platforms as On The Wine Road Podcast, and more on Facebook. You're invited to join me again next Saturday for another adventure on The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.